I'm very happy to welcome to our program Caroline Fredrickson. She's president of the American Constitutional Society. And we've invited Caroline here this evening to talk about a very important and possibly precedent-setting case that will quite shortly be before the U.S. Supreme Court, a case called Friedrichs versus California Teachers Association. And Caroline, thank you so much for making time to come on our first show of the new year. Appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much for having me, and Happy New Year to you.
Thank you. And, you know, I think it'll become clear to our listeners why we've chosen this topic for our first show of 2016, given the importance of this case. But before we get to the actual issues of what's at stake in Friedrichs versus California Teachers Association, tell our listeners a bit about the organization you work with as president, the American Constitutional Society.
Right. Well, thank you. The American Constitution Society is an organization that was founded in 2001 to provide a very important counter to the right's efforts to pack the courts with judges who think the Constitution should be interpreted as if we still lived in 1789, and that we should have very limited constitutional rights, as opposed to the view that so many of us share in the 21st century, that the Constitution is actually a document that guarantees fundamental rights for all Americans, and that has allowed us as a country to advance by being interpreted in light of current circumstances. And so we work to ensure that there are good judges on the bench that are fair-minded, that believe in equal opportunity and equal justice, and make sure that we are working to enlighten the public about how to understand the laws in our Constitution.
Thank you for that important work that you're doing there. And what we wanted to do first is provide our listeners a little bit of background on the legal case that, as we said, will soon be heard by the U.S. Supreme Court, Friedrichs versus California Teachers Association. Tell us a little bit about this case, how it came about. And, of course, we'll get to the important question of what's at stake here in the Supreme Court decision.
Yes. Well, it's a very important case. The basic issue that's at stake is a First Amendment challenge, a free speech challenge to laws that affect the employee speech rights of public employees. And the case was brought, and you mentioned the name, it's Friedrichs versus California Teachers Association. The lawsuit is against the union, California Teachers Association, and in part it reflects the dissident teachers are saying that they should not have to pay any fee to the union to cover the costs of the collective bargaining process. They're not paying any fee for political activities or anything aside from the very limited issue of the cost of getting them a higher wage. And this arrangement, this fair share arrangement, has been the law for decades, has been affirmed by the Supreme Court in many, many cases. And what is at stake now is that these plaintiffs, the Friedrichs plaintiffs, are trying to argue that there should be no such arrangement allowable, and thus that they should be able to get the benefit of any collective bargaining agreement, get the higher wages and benefits, and not have to pay any fee. So it's basically the free rider rights approach. And I would just say, so that the listeners understand, it's actually the law in this country that unions have to represent everybody fairly in the bargaining unit. So they can't say, all right, we're only going to represent those workers who are our members. They have to represent everybody who is doing that job and in that bargaining unit, regardless of whether they're a union member or not. So essentially, this gets at the variability of unions to be able to represent and fight for the rights of workers. It's brought by a group of people who are represented by some very right-wing foundations that are funded by the Koch brothers. This is part and parcel of the effort of dismantling a progressive America. And so this is about trying to destroy the public employee unions and ultimately destroy the private sector unions. And that will follow. But again, it's a case that's completely unprecedented. There's longstanding case law affirming this arrangement. And the school districts in the states really like it. It's a good arrangement for them. It gives them labor peace, and it gives them a good way of interacting with their employees.
So I understand it. Oral arguments before the Supreme Court will take place on January 11th. Is that right?
That's right, yes.
Yeah.
Just now, next week.
That's right, coming close. Caroline, from my understanding, the union's right to charge the members it represents in the workplace, union agency fees or union dues, has been on the books really for almost 40 years now.
Indeed. Mm-hmm.
How is it that the court all of a sudden is taking on this case, which could dramatically shift this longstanding precedent?
Well, I mean, I think your listeners are probably not surprised that there's some real activists on the Supreme Court, including Justice Alito. A couple of years ago, there was a case called Harris v. Quinn, and that involved a case of home health care workers in Illinois that addressed a related issue, but not directly this issue. But in his opinion, Justice Alito said, I'd really like to overturn the case, Abood, which is the underlying case here, the 40-year-old case that you mentioned. I really like to get a case that would present me the opportunity to overrule that case and destroy public employee union. And so he put in his opinion that he wanted this case in front of him, signaling more or less that he'd been working on his colleagues on the right to try and attack this precedent. And so what happened was, you know, these right-wing groups and the Koch brothers ginned up this case with a couple of plaintiffs, you know, against the vast majority of teachers who actually appreciate the fact they're getting a better wage and better benefits because they have a union. And they drove this case to the court. And what's amazing about it is that they actually said in the lower court, rule against us. We don't want to make a record. We don't want to go to trial. We don't want to actually prove our claims. So just rule against us so we can get it up to the Supreme Court as fast as possible. It was on the express train to the Supreme Court. That's what makes it particularly strange is that there's actually no record. The Supreme Court gets a very full set of documents about what the trial, allowed them to, the court to understand, but the trial court saw what the trial court's ruling was, what the appellate court then did with that. So you have facts and evidence, you have facts evaluated in the court, in the trial process. Then you have the procedural issues and the law evaluated by the appeals court. And then the Supreme Court should be looking at all of those things. Instead, in this case, there's none of that, because there was such a political interest in getting this case in front of the court, driven by Justice Alito, who basically asked for it to be sent to him.
We're speaking with Caroline Frederickson. She's president of the American Constitution Society, and we're talking about a case that will be before the Supreme Court for oral arguments on January 11th, and that's the case known as Friedrichs versus California Teachers Association. Caroline, when it comes to public service workers, folks like teachers, nurses, social workers, and firefighters, what's at stake for them in this case? What would happen to public service unions if the Supreme Court justices uphold the plaintiff's case here?
Well, I mean, we have a really good set of facts to evaluate that with, because we have what are unfortunately called right-to-work laws, but are actually kind of the opposite. Right to be paid less is more like it. And what happens when there's a right-to-work law adopted in a state is that immediately the public sector unions lose a very large number of members, because, again, you know, it's understandable in an individual person who says, wow, I could pay for what this work that gets done that gives me a higher wage, or I could get my higher wage for free and not pay in. But when too many people do that, then the unions cannot actually engage in the work to get the better wages, to get the better benefits, and it is really destructive of the whole strength of the labor movement. What's so interesting is that there's a kind of a perverse argument here on the right about this free speech rights of the employees, and that is, if you recognize that every single thing that a public employee says is entitled to free speech rights, then you've created a really powerful element in the public sector of workers who can basically say anything anytime they want in a way that is so unusual. In fact, it doesn't exist in any other workplace. I mean, just imagine, you know, for all the listeners in your workplace, can you say, I hate my boss, this job sucks, this is a terrible company, you know, whatever, on and on and on, and consider that to be protected by free speech. That's ultimately where this would go. If you recognize that there's a free speech right for these employees to object to these fair share arrangements, everything that public employees would be saying would be protected under this kind of free speech idea. So it's a very perverse argument that has, you know, I suppose unintended consequences, but it's a sort of an element of this case that people aren't paying much attention to. But it's the one reason why, or one of the reasons why, there is certainly some hope that some of the conservative justices would not agree with Justice Alito, because it has a perverse impact on the ability of governments to treat their employees like employees, like any other employer, in the sense of not constitutionalizing everything that the employee says. So, you know, that's a sort of wrinkle in this case. But the ultimate issue here is that workers have the right to come together that has been recognized in this context for 40 years to articulate an argument for higher wages and to do it collectively. And by this case could be the end of that.
Would the net effect be the bankruptcy of some of these public service employees unions? Would that be what would happen if enough employees opted out of paying their union dues, the whole system could collapse? Is that the idea here?
Well, you know, in a kind of, maybe not an absolute sense of bankruptcy, but certainly metaphorically, it would certainly be very hard for many of them to operate, and you'd certainly see some of them no longer able to function, but they'd be weak. In any case, they'd be very weak, and the weaker they would be in their ability to get workers higher wages, the less workers would support them, and the weaker they would become. And so, you know, I think it's a very dangerous spiral downwards for workers, because the weaker the unions get, the less leverage the workers have to get better wages, to get better benefits. And I would also say the thing that's really important to remember about public sector unions is that the public sector unions have achieved in our economy the best record in terms of narrowing the wage gap between women and men and between minorities and white people. And that's because it's been part of their mission is to get fair wages and benefits and to eliminate discrimination. And so it's a sector where women and minorities have really achieved more than they have in the rest of the economy. And that is also at stake. To the extent that public sector unions are weakened.
Caroline, ultimate free speech rights in the public sector workplace, would that also give the ability, or would that also bestow upon unions the right to refuse to serve those employees in the workplace who do not pay union dues? Is that not a free speech right in itself?
Well, and that's an interesting point. It might very well lead to that because, you know, as I mentioned earlier, the system we have now, it's called exclusive representation, which means one union represents all the employees, and the corollary of that is that the union has to represent everyone in the bargaining unit. And to the extent that there may be an argument that the unions would want to advance. They haven't wanted to until now because they want to represent all the workers. They believe it's their mission to represent workers. And so they don't pick and choose. And they have, when they've had a shop that where you've had people who've decided to only pay their fair share fees and opt out of the political membership of the union, they represent those people to the fullest, as just as they represent everybody else. But I think you raise a very interesting point that might be the direction they would go. But it would be a very different kind of union movement. And unions in other countries function that way because they have a different set of laws. They only represent their members. They don't represent other people who are in the same job categories. But that hasn't been the American model. And I think it would be a real shame if we went in that direction.
Now, you mentioned the group behind this litigation funded by the Koch brothers. As I understand it, that's the group known as the Center for Individual Rights, which has also been it's also been engaged in attacks on Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act.
Exactly.
What is their ideological bent, as far as we know, in terms of what are their ultimate objectives here?
Well, you know, I wouldn't call myself an expert, but I think they're very antagonistic to worker rights generally. And so this is one piece of their agenda of dismantling the only institutions that actually have enabled people to climb into the middle class, who have really done an incredible job through the 20th century of giving people a hand up, of recognizing the intrinsic value of labor, and the Center for Individual Rights is absolutely antagonistic to that idea. And, you know, it's unfortunate that they have decided that they want to exercise their ideology by denying so many workers the advantages that they have been able to achieve through their union. But, you know, that's what they do. So unfortunately, here we are again. And I'm sure this isn't the last case that they will bring trying to dismantle the New Deal and its legacy.
Caroline, what's been the response of the labor movement to this threat in this case, Friedrichs versus California Teachers Association?
Well, you know, I think they are doing everything they can to remind people of the role that they have played and the mechanism of collective bargaining and how that has enabled so many workers to be treated more fairly and to get a better wage, and the importance of collective action for people who have very little leverage in the workplace. And so, you know, they're doing their best to get their message out. And actually it's hopefully a galvanizing moment for the labor movement to remind people, even their own members, of what their role is and what a critical part of the economic system they are in addressing wealth inequality. And so that's, I think they've been really trying to, you know, do their own organizing to be ready, whatever way this case goes, to make sure their own members continue to be enthusiastic and to continue to pay their union dues no matter what the Supreme Court decides.
This case will be decided in a presidential election year where the topic of income inequality and growing disparity between the rich and poor is one of those major issues being discussed in U.S. politics. Do you think the fact that this is a presidential election year may affect the Supreme Court justice's decision here?
Well, you know, there's certainly a lot of context, and, you know, I can't say that I'm in the room when they make when they have their private conversations and decide how they're going to rule, but they don't live in a bubble, or at least not entirely in a bubble. They read newspapers, they watch television, they have friends and colleagues and people they've worked with in other contexts, and so they're certainly aware. I think it has a heightened urgency because of the fact that this is an election year, and that this is, this case is really a pivotal one in terms of the power of the progressive movement, in which labor has been a critical pillar. And of course, labor's mobilization during the election, may actually be, really, energized by a negative Supreme Court ruling. I think all those things are kind of the context in which the Supreme Court makes a decision. But ultimately, what I'm hoping very much is that they think about what the court's role is. The court's role, is to, not to intervene in politics and not to try and put its thumb on the scale. And in this case, overruling the Abood case, which is the underlying case that has for 40 years enabled this system that is supported by both employers and employees in which the unions represent, and those who don't want to be part of the union pay a fair share fee, has worked really well. It's supported by everybody except for a couple of dissidents. And you know, the Supreme Court should do what the court's role is, which is not to be a political branch, and should there's no reason for them to overrule this longstanding precedent. There's not a new fact. There's not a new issue. Because as I mentioned earlier, there are no new facts in the record here because they didn't actually develop a factual record because they didn't have a real development of the case in the trial court below because these plaintiffs just wanted to put this case in front of the Supreme Court. So if the Supreme Court were to decide that now's the time to overrule Abood and to get rid of these longstanding and well-liked arrangements, that would be political, and that would make a real change in the American political environment. And I would hope they would be loath to do that.
So you're going to be hosting a briefing about this in Washington this Wednesday, the 6th of January, just
yes.
to
uh-huh.
gather yourself and a lot of academics and people from the union movement to discuss the importance of this case, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. It's we have several people who are there who have written briefs for in the case. And we also have people who are who support the plaintiffs. It'll be a very interesting discussion,
mm-hmm.
Really reviewing all sides of the arguments. But it's the kind of program that my organization, the American Constitution Society, puts on regularly, again, to educate the public, judges, lawyers, law professors, and other interested people in the sort of the basic legal issues that are at stake in these cases and an understanding of what is the role of the Supreme Court and how should it be how should it understand these constitutional issues.
Well, Caroline, thank you so much for really giving us some insight into this important case coming up, Friedrichs versus California Teachers Association, going before this U.S. Supreme Court for oral arguments January 11th. And leave our listeners, if you would, with your web address so people can find more information about this case and the other issues you're working on.
Absolutely. It's www.acslaw.org.
Caroline, it's been great having you on. Thanks so much. I hope we can talk about this after the case is decided, maybe with some celebrating to do. Okay.
Absolutely. I hope so very much.
All right.
Thank you again for having me on.
Take care, Caroline. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
That's Caroline Frederickson. She's president of the American Constitution Society, talking about this important case for labor, for the entire workforce, Friedrichs versus California Teachers Association.